Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Collins Foods Limited FY18 results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Graham Maxwell, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Amber, and morning, guys. With me on the call, I have Nigel Williams, our CFO, Drew O'Malley, our Chief Operating Officer, and Ron Blatchford from MarketEye. I'm very pleased to be able to take you through the results for Collins Foods Limited for the year to the 29th of April, 2018. This was a big year for Collins Foods, with the group results reflecting a significant expansion of the business, mainly through strategic acquisitions. Revenue was up 21.7% from 633.6 million to 770.9 million. The increase in revenue was driven by acquisitions in addition to positive comp sales growth and new store openings. EBITDA was up 16.4% on an underlying basis from 81.3 million to 94.5 million, reflecting good flow-through of the extra revenue. Underlying NPAT was 38.9 million, up 13.3% on the prior year. At this point, please note there are a number of significant items that I'll go through in more detail in a moment. Net operating cash flow was 74.5 million, up 14 million on prior year due to higher EBITDA and some working capital benefit from the acquisitions completed during the year. Net debt increased 94.1 million to 227.2 million due to the completion of the Netherlands and the Australian acquisitions. The net leverage ratio, that's the net debt to EBITDA, was 2.14. Underlying basic earnings per share was 0.338, down from 0.357 per share at the prior year. This has been impacted by the timing lag of the earnings of the acquisition in relation to the issuing of additional shares to fund them. This impact will wash through in the next financial year. A fully franked dividend of 0.09 per share will be paid, taking the full-year dividend to 0.17 per share, in line with prior year. As per previous comment, the timing lag of the earnings of the acquisition in relation to the issuing of additional shares to fund them has had an impact. In reference to the significant items mentioned earlier, let me take you through those in a little bit more detail. These include acquisition costs of approximately 3.3 million when aggregated and are principally related to the completion and integration of the Netherlands acquisition and the majority completion of the Australian acquisition. Most of the costs incurred for the partial completion of the Australian acquisitions being stamp duty. European setup and integration costs of 600,000. Other items affecting NPAT include 700,000 provision for costs to exit Snagstand and two non-cash write-offs to do with previously incurring refinancing fees and Snagstand deferred tax assets. The overall NPAT significant items total was approximately 6.4 million. I'd now like to take you through the operating highlights by the relative brands. Our core KFC business in Australia had a solid year. Total revenue growth was up 13.6%, reflecting in part the extra sales from 25 newly acquired stores and the opening of a further five new restaurants. Same-store sales growth across KFC Australia was 1%. These numbers are somewhat dampened by softer comps in Western Australia. The Western Australian comps turned positive in the last quarter of the financial year. Since the half year, we have completed all but one of the 28 stores included in the Australian acquisition announced last year. The final store is expected to complete within the next couple of months. We have also built five new KFC restaurants in Australia during the year. In Europe, the Germany transformation plan is progressing well, with same-store sales growth of 1.7%. The Netherlands is performing to expectations with pro forma same-store sales growth of 1.2%. Four new restaurants have been built and opened. First talk of our restaurant opened late last year and is trading ahead of our expectations, and customer engagement with the brand remains relatively high. Further restaurants are planned to follow within our 2019 financial year. Sizzler Australia delivered positive EBITDA growth and despite a small decline in same-store sales. We have closed a further restaurant since the half, albeit just after our financial year end. The restaurant count as of today in Australia is 13. Sizzler Asia sales and earnings continue to grow. Our franchise partner opened 5 net new restaurants during the half. Royalty revenue was up nearly 10% in the year. Regarding Snag Stand, further to the announcement at the half year, we have closed this business. All exit costs have been accounted for at the half year. Now looking at each of the businesses in a little bit more detail, starting with KFC on slide 5. Over the last 18 months, we have made a series of significant strategic acquisitions of KFC restaurants, both in Australia and Europe. This has increased the scale and geographic diversity of our business and strengthened our growth platform. As of today, we have 260 KFC restaurants across the countries we operate in. Further to this, we have a strong development plan, which will add between 14 and 16 new restaurants to our KFC portfolio over the next year, and we anticipate this number increasing further in subsequent years. Post our strategic expansion, our balance sheet remains healthy, with a net leverage ratio of 2.1. We are fully focused on completing the integration of all acquired restaurants and ensuring they deliver to expectations. Moving to page 7 and looking specifically at KFC Australia. So following the completion of bar 1 of the 28 acquired stores, we now have an expanded footprint across Australia and account for over 35% of the national KFC presence. Since the half, as part of the acquisition, we have opened the 2 restaurants built by Yum in Western Australia, completed on the 14 restaurants in Tasmania, and 7 out of the 8 in South Australia. The final store to complete is located in South Australia and has been held up due to the lease assignment process. We expect the store to complete over the next couple of months. The integration of these restaurants is progressing well and they are performing to our expectations. In addition to the acquisition, we built a further 5 restaurants during the year and closed 3. Of these closures, 1 was a food court, 1 was in Western Australia, which was closed down ahead of a relocate, and the 3rd was the expiry of its lease where the landlord had sold the property for development. Since year-end, we have opened 1 more restaurant, bringing the current total to 225. In terms of overall financial performance, KFC Australia had a solid year. Total revenue was up 13.6% to $624.1 million through a combination of same-store sales growth, building new stores and acquisitions. The same-store sales growth for the year was 1%, impacted somewhat by softer comps in WA. However, I'm pleased to see that the WA comps returned to positive in the final quarter of the year. The newly acquired restaurants are not included in this measure. Applying the Yum methodology and including the recent acquired restaurants since we owned them, our comps for the year were 1.4%. The key difference in methodology is that the Collins exclude the impact of remodeling in our comps calculation, where Yum does not. EBITDA is now nudging $100 million, and this is before the full effect of acquisitions that were completed partway through the prior financial year. KFC Australia EBITDA grew by 10.5% from $89.8 million to $99.3 million, with an overall EBITDA margin of 15.9%, slightly down on the prior year, influenced by promotional activity that resulted in a small shift in product mix and some sales deleverage effect from the softness in WA sales. The KFC business continues to lead innovation in the QSR space and has continued to generate new product ideas and innovate around its core range. Standout products launched during the half were the Big Cheese and the Triple Bacon Burger. These products continue to provide customers with new products to try, keeping the brand fresh and bringing customers back. Standout value items include the $5 fill-up box and the $2 chips. Moving to slide 10. Our operational focus is centered on increasing the systemization of our processes and procedures to not just provide a high level of customer experience, but also to ensure we increase the overall productivity and efficiency. The Particular emphasis here is on improved labor management through better rostering capability and improving customer experience through increased speed of service. This heightened focus has come about through not only the increase in store count, but also the geographic spread we now have to work with. Our delivery trial continues to go well. We are expanding the number of restaurants in trial from 5 Queensland restaurants to include a further 9 restaurants in Perth starting today. We have engaged Deliveroo for the Perth trial, and as mentioned, this kicks off this week. In addition, we have launched our own delivery operation at our indoor Pilli restaurant. With both our own program and that of the aggregators, we have a great platform to evaluate the delivery options. To date, we are very pleased with the results. Transactions and customer engagements are ahead of expectations. We anticipate delivery being rolled out to an additional 15 to 30 restaurants before the end of our financial year. At the same time, we'll also be looking to determine the best longer-term operating model to maximize our results from delivery. Our remodeled and new restaurant program continues to drive growth. A total of 5 new restaurants are built and 29 remodels completed, with a capital spend of approximately $22 million. Of 5 new restaurants, 2 were built in Western Australia, 1 in Northern Territory, and 2 in Queensland. These new restaurants are all tracking positively to our internal capital return hurdles, and we're also pleased with the sales uplift seen across our major remodels. We expect to build and open a further 8 restaurants during the next financial year. Turning to our European business, we had a total of 33 KFC restaurants in Europe at the year end, with 2 more having been opened since the year end, resulting in a total of 35 restaurants. Of these, 17 are in Germany, with 18 in the Netherlands. Since the acquisition of Germany and the Netherlands, we have opened a total of 7 restaurants, with 4 of them being in the FY18 financial years. And these were in Utrecht and Rijswijk in the Netherlands, and Kirchheim, Tech and Munster in Germany. As mentioned previously, the European new restaurants take longer to get to the sales and EBITDA run rate. This can be between 1 and 2 years, which is in contrast to on average 3 months in Australia. This is directly related to brand awareness levels in Europe compared to Australia. Regarding the overall Europe business, the Netherlands is performing in line with the expectations, while Germany has seen some improvements due to the business transformation plan implemented last year. The overall results for Europe show revenue of $91.6 million, with same-store sales growth of 0.8% after adjusting for the impact of two stores cannibalized. On a pro forma basis, factoring in a full-year sales effect of the Netherlands, same-store sales were 1.4%. The testing of value propositions in Germany, for example, the 15 hot wings for €5 on a Tuesday, has shown good results, and this concept will be incorporated more widely in our marketing calendar going forward. Underlying EBITDA was $6.6 million at a margin of 7.2% after adjusting for $600,000 of setup and integration costs. Restaurant level EBITDA, so that's EBITDA at restaurant level for the acquired restaurants in both countries, are in line with the expectations. In Germany, the transformation plan that we spoke about the half year's earnings release has gained traction and has had a positive impact with improvements in both sales and margins. Overall, the underlying EBITDA for our KFC Europe restaurants in the year was impacted by 3 main factors. Firstly, the operation costs associated with opening new restaurants. On a relatively small base of restaurants, these costs have a big impact. Secondly, as mentioned at the half, we invested in our overhead infrastructure ahead of the Netherlands acquisition. And thirdly, the additional statutory and administration costs of operating across multiple countries is higher than initially planned. Looking forward, the priorities for Europe are to continue the transformation plan in Germany during the year and drive sales and margin improvements. Keep refining the value offering in Germany and fully integrating the Netherlands business, working closely with Yum to drive the top line. And finally, to focus on getting new restaurant openings to the run rate earlier than currently being experienced. The implementation of these priorities will be bolstered by the recent appointment of a head of operations for KFC Europe, who starts on the 2nd of July. Finally, in Europe, a comment on our development plans. As previously mentioned, we built two new KFC restaurants in Germany as well as in the Netherlands. We undertook three major remodels, two in Germany and one in the Netherlands. The total CapEx spend associated with this activity was around 12 million Australian dollars. During our 2019 financial year, we expect to build a further six to eight additional restaurants in Europe and complete seven major remodels. Of the new restaurants, two have already been built and were opened in Germany in May. Our plan in the medium term remains intact with the intention to build between 8 and 10 restaurants per year. However, over the next year, we want to consolidate on our learnings before pushing ahead. Total CapEx for the year is expected to be around 20 million Australian dollars. Moving our attention to Taco Bell on page 17. As previously reported, we opened our first store at Annerley near Brisbane late last year. Since opening, the store has continued to trade strongly, with the economic model delivering to expectations. Customer engagement in the brand has been very high, with the Taco Bell brand being embraced by all Australians. Our Sunday sessions of local music has become a crowd favourite. We will open further restaurants over the next year while we continue to test the viability of the brand. Sizzler revenues are down 22% from 65 million to 50.8 million for the year, driven mainly by the closure of two restaurants since this time last year. Despite the decline in sales, the same-store sales growth for Australian stores was only marginally negative at minus 0.5, with EBITDA margin remaining positive. Overall, EBITDA was 4.6 million, with a margin of 9%, up 200 basis points on prior year. Earnings growth in Sizzler Asia continued to offset the decline in Sizzler Australia. The restaurant count is currently at 13, following a further restaurant closure since the year end. The restaurants will continue to be assessed on an ongoing basis in relation to the individual performance, expiry of the lease, and local circumstances. Sizzler Asia continues to expand its footprint, with a total of 73 restaurants at the year end. This reflects a net opening of 5 restaurants during the year. Royalty revenues for the year were up nearly 10% due to new restaurant openings and a strong value offering in Thailand. I'll now hand you over to Nigel to take you through the financials.
Thanks, Graham. I'm pleased to report on continued growth in net operating cash flow. Net operating cash flow before interest and tax was up to 74.5 million from 60.6 million prior year, reflecting the EBITDA improvement referred to earlier, and a favourable working capital movement due to the acquisition of the stores in the Netherlands and Australia. The net cash flow from investing activities was 243.3 million, comprising 198 million for acquisitions, 103.9 for the purchase of 25 KFC stores in Australia and the deposit on the remaining Australian stores yet to complete at year end, and 94.1 million for the purchase of 16 KFC stores in Netherlands. 43.8 million for CapEx and 1.5 million for the purchase of franchise rights, essentially the usual fees for new store openings just paid up front. The 43.8 CapEx cash spend was made up of the following. New store and remodel CapEx in KFC was circa 33 million, approximately 22 million in Australia and 11 million in Europe. Maintenance and other group CapEx was approximately 10 million Australian dollars. Net cash flow from financing was 121 million. This included 44.2 million relating to the capital raising, net of fees, to partially fund the Australian acquisition, 18.9 million of dividends paid, and 95.7 million relating to net extra facilities drawn. Excluding the investment and financing activities associated with the Netherlands and Australian acquisitions, the cash flow for FY18 was plus 11.8 million. Net debt was up to 227.2 million from 133.1 million at prior year end, driven by the Netherlands and Australian acquisitions. Net leverage ratio stood at 2.1. Our covenant for this metric is 2.75, and the bank facility is approximately 366 million Australian dollars. So we continue to operate well within our covenant and facility headroom. On slide 25, looking at the balance sheet, the cash balance is down to 60.5 million following the settlement of the acquisitions completed during the year. Property, plant and equipment is up 61.9 million, reflecting the acquired restaurant assets and continued investment in new and remodeled stores, partially offset by depreciation. Total non-current assets are also up significantly due to the increase in goodwill as a result of the acquisitions. Gross debt increased to 286 million in order to fund the acquisitions. Now back to Graham for a word on the priorities for our 2019 financial year.
Thanks, Nigel. The plan for our core KFC Australian business is to remain focused on transaction driving store sales growth, particularly here in Western Australia. We also stay disciplined on operational margin management, continue on our delivery of our launch of delivery, and build another 8 new restaurants. Further to this, we'll ensure that the newly acquired KFC restaurants in Western Australia, South Australia and Tasmania are fully embedded into our system. Our focus for the KFC European business will be to continue the transformation plan in Germany and build upon the solid foundations in the Netherlands. We will continue building a strong and efficient back office function and add a further 6 to 8 restaurants in Europe. We will also continue to test the viability of Taco Bell by building additional restaurants, launching new products and further developing social engagement. I'd now like to open up the call for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Wasim Kersawani from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I've just got a question on the same-store sales in Australia, if you can maybe elaborate on that a little bit more. Obviously, still at a sort of sluggish-type growth rate. Can you just give us a sense of how much impact WA is having and maybe talk a bit about the mix effect that you also highlighted?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no problem. Look, I think in terms of the general trading conditions that we've seen in both Queensland and Western Australia, they really haven't changed during the course of the year. What we have done in Western Australia is actually focused towards the back end of last year and then into this year, focused fairly intently on an additional layer of activity. More around value propositions to stimulate demand, looking at it a bit more holistic than just couponing. And this certainly has had a positive effect. And our sense is that we're probably bucking the trend a little bit in Western Australia versus some of our other major competitors. So we did see the fourth quarter for Western Australia turn positive. In terms of comps, and the 2 periods subsequent to the close, the comp sales in Western Australia have remained positive. Certainly, I think in the broader Western Australian economy, there are signs in different areas and different industries of the economy having bottomed out. And if you look at some of the key metrics for us around house pricing and employment, we certainly draw comfort that we would probably see more upside than downside, I think, from a general recovery amongst our consumer base. Moving across to Queensland, we probably saw a continuation of the same-store sales in the second half as we saw in the first half. And then moving into this year, the first 2 periods in this year, we have seen a little bit of an uptick off the back of that. So after 2 periods, we're probably sitting just over 3 points of same-store sales growth within our business, KFC business in Australia. In terms of the product mix, so certainly Western Australia has had a bit of an impact in this, and some other promotional activities where we push value pretty hard. And as a net result of that, it has affected cost of sales slightly. Certainly putting a third layer into Western Australia to stimulate more sales activity, obviously will have some impact. Now, that we do see as recoverable, as it is a short to medium term initiative that we have in place to manage sales and, more importantly for us, market share.
Great. Thanks, Graham. And then maybe just a question on Europe and the margins that, out of that business. You called out some of the sort of higher than planned, admin type costs and store costs offsetting your store level performance. How do you see that playing out over FY19? Where do you see that sort of margin trending to in Europe?
Yeah, look, I think the key thing for us in Europe is that the acquired restaurants in both countries, both in the Netherlands and in Germany, are tracking in line with our expectations at the point of acquisition. So certainly we had, I think, reported at the half that we had some softness. We managed to claw some of that back in Germany to finish the existing restaurant base in a good position. In terms of the general softness in margins, the three areas that I sort of identified, one was around new store openings. So we've opened 7 new stores in effectively 18 months, and that was off a base of 28 that we went in with. So it's a pretty significant percentage off a small base. So certainly that does have an impact, and that will work its way through as those stores hit their straps. The two other areas that we picked up, one was just in terms of we had invested a little bit ahead of the curve prior to the Netherlands coming on board, which we should see that sort of wash through in the course of next year. And then the third one was just in terms of general, I suppose, statutory administration overheads, just running multiple countries and the professional fees and other stuff that goes with it, that we'll see continue to stay. That's probably in the region of about $500,000, the costs associated with that. It'll come down as a percent as the sales increase over time, but that'll probably transfer through 19 and into 20.
Okay, great. And just a final question from me, just on acquisition opportunities and what you are seeing on this front and the capacity internally at the moment for acquisitions.
Yeah, look. In all honesty, a number of the acquisitions that came out last year were a direct result of Yum refranchising its own business. If you recall, they spun the Chinese business, which is a significant part of their equity business, off sort of October the year before. And as a result of that, they then looked to refranchise a lot of their own operations. So from a franchisor perspective, we don't see any opportunities in the medium term coming out of that. Subsequent to that, because certainly here in Australia there was a fair amount of activity around from the franchisor's perspective, the local guys did shut up shop a little bit. However, with that all settled down, I think both here and Europe there are some opportunities. Exactly what they are, I can't be too specific, but certainly have re-engaged with various franchisees to keep the dialogue open if any opportunities do come up for acquisitions.
Okay, great. Thanks, Graham.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tim Plum from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a couple of questions from me, if possible, and apologies, my line cut out a little bit. But are you guys able to talk about the value menu offering in Germany? I think you were doing some initial trials. So what have you found in the areas where you've been trialing that relative to the rest of Germany?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, thanks, Tim. Yes, certainly one of the areas that we identified fairly on in the piece is that the German pricing structure was a full menu price on one hand, and then the quite extensive use of couponing to drive discounting at the other end. In our mind, couponing is fairly old school, and then really looking at value in its true sense as a broader proposition is a much stronger and sustainable one. So what we did there was we launched we tested it in the Stuttgart region. So we have 8 restaurants down in there, and it's 15 hot wings for €5 on a Tuesday. We had pretty good success off the back of that. I would say between the 30 and 40% same-store sales growth on the particular Tuesday that it was running. Off the back of that, work was done with the broader franchise community, and it went national earlier in the year. And on the Tuesday, we were seeing sort of sales somewhere between 50 and 100% of the Tuesday. So bear in mind, you know, Tuesday is not your biggest day, but you're actually getting a real kicker off the back of that, and certainly that had a flow through during the rest of the week. Now, that only ran for 6 weeks, but what it did, it validated our hypothesis that we need to be a lot more strategic in the way we work with value and value offerings within the marketplace, and that's not necessary to substitute or subsidize the full menu price. It's important that we maintain that. But it's just to provide an alternative mechanism, particularly to drive transactions into the business. So we're pretty buoyant by what we've seen off the back of that. Obviously, Australia went through the whole change in mindset to value probably starting 5-6 years ago. So it does take a while for the whole thing to sort of to bed into place. But for us, understanding how the consumers reacted, it was key at this point.
Great. And just, if I look at the numbers, I think in the first half, Germany was kind of 0.4% like-for-likes, and Netherlands was 2.5%. If I do the quick back solve, it implies that Germany has accelerated up to 3%, but Netherlands has kind of dropped to almost flat. Is there a change somewhere between the two regions, first half to second half? And if so, can you talk a little bit in terms of what's driving that?
Your back-solving calculations are pretty accurate. So certainly, the German business did run well. Look, the Netherlands business, I think there's been a few changes within that business. Obviously, the GM came across to our side and a new GM, so I think there was just a little bit of change within that. But the fundamentals still remain strong within the Netherlands business, and we do see that business continue to grow.
Great. And then just one last question. In terms of a follow-on from Wasim's question, the promotional activity in KFC Australia, I've noticed definitely in New South Wales, McDonald's 24 nuggets for $9.95 seems like a permanent offering now. How has the competition been, and has that also played a little bit of a role in terms of the extent of the promotional activity that you've had to do? And if so, is that kind of heightened level here to stay in FY19?
It is a bit of a street battle out there, there's no doubt. And certainly, McDonald's and Hungry Jack's are pretty aggressive in this space. I would have thought during 19, we're not going to see significant change in the activity around value. And it's interesting, if you look across most of retail, value is really here to stay in a sense. Within the various value plays, we just need to be a little bit more cautious on some of the cost structures within them. So a 24 nuggets for $10 versus a $1 chips versus a $10 bucket of popcorn will have different cost of sale measures in there. So for us, it's really trying to manage to those. But value in its broad sense, is here to stay.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Thanks, gents. Tim and Wasim have covered most of the questions I had. Just a couple, perhaps, for Nigel. Could you give us some insights on the CapEx and D&A front for FY19? I think you mentioned a number of $20 million of CapEx for Europe, but for the entire group, could you give us a bit of guidance around CapEx and D&A for the year ahead?
Yeah. So across the whole group, including the 20 million Aussie for Europe, you're probably looking at around late 50s, maybe 60 million of capital. That's on the basis of the new store openings that Graham has referred to in KFC, all the remodels and some new Taco Bells. So 20 million in Europe and about 40 domestically. And then D&A, so you're probably looking at mid to late 30s for D&A, probably towards the higher end of that, assuming we get all the CapEx spent in the year.
Yep. And Nigel, while you have the floor, what's the average euro rate that was implied by the translation of earnings across through the year?
I have that written down, James, but I don't have it off the top of my head, so I'll get back to you on that.
Yep, okay, thanks. And Graeme, can we just go back to your comments about delivery earlier on? In a broader sense, how have your thoughts evolved in terms of the do-it-yourself versus using the aggregator type business model, and how much of this is within the control of Collins Foods versus Yum driving the process?
Yeah, no, good question. We've taken the view that we want to understand both, and also in conjunction with that, actually understands how the consumer interacts with the different models per se. One of the the downsides of having an aggregator is that the delivery guy that fronts up at the front door is not a KFC employee. So being able to have a KFC employee take the food all the way up to the front door and to close up the whole transaction is something that we're really keen on. There's a bunch of other areas, like customer data and the like, which add value. So for us, we're looking at both models. But at the same time, we're also quite conscious that aggregators tend to hog the center of cities and don't spread out as wide as our network base. So if we look at some of our regional places, whether it's up in Mackay or Rockhampton, do Deliveroo and some of the other aggregators operate up there. We have a whole bunch of smaller regional stores, which they won't go to. So for us, is there a hybrid model that exists that optimizes delivery for us? And that's really what we're exploring at this point in time.
Yeah, just to add on a little bit to what Graeme said, it is important to understand that, look, we're absolutely convinced delivery is the future of the market and has enormous potential, but we are in early days, so it is important that we continue to develop our understanding of both models. So as Graeme mentioned, the own delivery, while it has probably more challenging economics and operational components, does have a lot of upside and may be one that we need to consider in the future as we expand. That said, with Deliveroo, and I think we've been pleased certainly with the deal that Yum has made with Deliveroo, so we obviously are not able to share a lot of the confidential components of it, but we've certainly been encouraged by what that will allow us to do in terms of expanding our delivery capability with at least one aggregator partner.
Sorry, you mentioned Fedora earlier as well. Is that a Collins-specific trial process?
Yeah, so Fedora, we have the initial 5 stores that we were testing, and there was an additional 7 stores that were being tested with Yum. The agreement with Fedora is going to be concluding within the next week, and Deliveroo will be the partner of choice for KFC across Australia. So the stores that we've been trialing with Fedora are in a 1-week transition where we'll run both, and then those stores will go completely over to Deliveroo next week.
When you're doing the delivery model, and I guess we're talking about the Indra Pilli shop
yes.
at the moment, what constraints or otherwise do you have around the current EBA, and do you need to make changes to that to accommodate a delivery model?
Yeah, I think it's early days for us. We've gotten a lot of support from Yum to really just broaden our understanding of what it would take to make that model work. So we have been sourcing our own scooters. We've been trialing delivery driver management software. So for us right now, it's really putting together the operational components, the consumer proposition that Graeme alluded to earlier with, is there a way as we gain scale to see the economics working? And at this stage, I'd say it's probably just a bit too early to call. We've only been in trial since April.
Okay, yep. And then final question on deliveries. Collectively across the the broader delivery trial, including the aggregators. You mentioned or made reference to an increase in sales and profit. I certainly understand the higher ticket value and your ability to measure that, but how do you measure cannibalization of in-store sales when you make a comment like increased sales and profit?
Yeah, so it's a fair question. I think over certainly in the early stages of what we've seen in the Foodora test, and I think this has been consistent with Yum, is that all the volume coming in from delivery has been incremental to the business. It's certainly logical to think that over a longer period of time that may start to cannibalize to some degree, but overall there should be an accretion to sales from expansion of delivery. So no real cannibalization that we've noted yet, but again, we are in a pretty early stage in the delivery market.
Thanks, Drew. And Graham, final question from me. Is there any more detail you can give us around Taco Bell in terms of the next steps on store rollout and broader plans for the brand in Australia?
Yeah, no, certainly. Look, we'll open a couple of stores at least by the end of this calendar year. And they'll also be in the broader Brisbane region. We need to get a few more on the ground. A single store, albeit that it's doing really great for us, is not a strong enough read. So we just need to to have some additional stores, actually understand what happens when because they will be probably 20 minutes drive time. Start to understand a little bit of that, see if we can replicate the economic model. And then off the back of that, then we need to make a decision as to whether we see that having significant rollout opportunities or not. But we want to cross the first bridge first.
Yep, sure. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matt Peake from Fisher Funds. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Just a couple of questions again on the Australian KFC business margins. One, are there any other factors impacting margins like electricity? Two, was there any specific impact of the Yum sale process on the promotional calendar? Three, as a result of that, is what kind of positive reversion might we expect moving forward? And then secondly, just whether there's any large M&A on the cards in Australia and with the KFC brand.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just going back, if we consider our input costs as a whole, there's certainly some that are ahead of others, and electricity is one that you have identified. But if you look at it as a whole, most of our input costs are within the CPR band. So chicken, we mentioned at the half, we have a deal that keeps it relatively flat. If we look at some of the other cost of goods, round about CPR, or just a little bit under, labour runs at its normal minimum wage increase. Outside of that, there's certainly electricity has been one that has had an impact across the country, some states more so than others. So here in Queensland, while our electricity cost is probably one of the highest in the country, we've been experiencing high electricity costs for a while, so the net incremental impact is nowhere near as significant as it is in New South Wales or in Victoria. So while we do see some of it come through, it hasn't impacted us to the same extent. Certainly, I think the other one that has come into New South Wales, and we expect to come through maybe at the end of this year, maybe next year, it really depends on the state government, is the recyclable cans and bottles tax, if you like, that has been put in place. So certainly these are things that we have been working on with the broader system. And as we look at the aggregate of input costs versus our pricing, we're comfortable that we can offset any of the spiky parts of our P&L. In terms of some of the promotional activities, we would expect to be able to get some of that back. There were a couple of pretty sharp promotional activities. But to me, the key one in there was probably more around some of the stuff we did in Western Australia. So the stuff that we did in the rest of the country, we might get a little bit of that back. But once the West actually gets back on its feet and be able to remove that third layer that I spoke about earlier on, should see that flow back into the system. And then the last one you had on big M&A, no, we don't see anything at the moment in Australia.
And then I guess just to sort of bring all of that together on margin, do you sort of have a sense that you can recover the margin that was lost in FY18 or partial recovery? Like what's the order of magnitude of the opportunity there?
Look, we would certainly be looking for a partial recovery of that. One of the areas that is a critical component in this whole thing is around comp growth. And so with a 1 point on average, we do start to experience some sales deleverage. But if you look at where we are now with getting up into the twos and above that, we should be able to sort of claw back a little bit of that.
Yeah, just to add on to what Graham said, I'd certainly reinforce the point that the key to the puzzle is certainly getting same-store sales growth up. And we've been really putting together a lot of emphasis on how we do that, specifically on driving speed of service. On the margin side, we have a basket of initiatives that we're certainly using right now in order to specifically address some of the margin components, including electricity, which was mentioned before. We did just onboard a new senior engineering manager who will be responsible for really helping to drive our initiatives on maintenance and energy. So as Graham mentioned, we are looking to recover as much of that margin as we can in the year to come.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Luke Mills from Craigs Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Graham and Nigel. Just wondering if you could share a bit more detail as to how you see your sort of roadmap for KFC playing out through, I guess, the New South Wales, Victoria state, given, I guess, on some of the earlier questions, you're not seeing any large-scale M&A opportunities near term?
The key for us within the Australian business is it's really around the timing of various franchisees who are looking to exit. Obviously, there are a number that are sort of getting close to retirement who don't necessarily have a succession planning and will be looking to exit over the upcoming years. I don't believe any of them of anything of major significance. Some of them could be 5 stores, 10 stores in that sort of region, but certainly my read of the big players within our business are probably all growers, not necessarily acquirers, but growers in a sense. So we certainly see opportunity with various franchise groups, but in a large extent it's around how do we sort of get the timing right with them. We certainly don't want to overpay, so it's not as if we're going to put big dollars on the table to get them across. So for us, it really needs to be at a market level. But at the same time, we also, we want to grow our restaurant build. So we'll build 8 new restaurants this year, and then probably 8 to 9 for the next 5 years is where we believe that we can continue to grow. So that should give us somewhere just over 40 new stores that we can physically build, as well as seek out those opportunities for acquisition.
And sorry, just to be clear on that, so I'll come back to that very last point, but so your strategy there is you've got a beachhead in both of those states and you'll just look to creep as opportunities present, both in terms of the right, in terms of the location and price. And then finally, your comment around building out, I think it was 8 to 9 stores, is that going to be in New South Wales and Victoria, or is it going to be across your other regions?
Look, it'll be across all the regions that we're in at the moment. So we certainly see some opportunity in Tasmania, some in South Australia, as well as the current places that we're in. There is potentially one in Victoria, but that's probably not for a few years. But yeah, so it's probably more dominant in Queensland and Western Australia.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. That does conclude our conference call today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.